We have been looking at the book of Proverbs, not moving straight through, but dipping in at various points throughout the book, looking at key passages, key themes. Next week, we're going to look at the topic of speech, how we talk or how we don't talk. And then we're going to finish up the week after that with Proverbs 30 and 31, the final two chapters. So with tonight, we've just got three more weeks on Proverbs. And today, we're going to look at something Proverbs talks quite a lot about, correction. Goes by a lot of names, discipline, rebuke, truce. The Lord disciplines the one he loves. Fools despise correction. Whoever listens to reproof gains knowledge. Like many things in the Bible, correction happens at various levels. In this case, at human levels, between friends or between family members. And at divine levels, so between God and people, or God and us. And from any of those perspectives, wherever you might be, correction is hard to embrace. The idea that you're being disciplined or put into line or going through a tough life lesson. It's difficult just to put up with it, really. Much less embrace it. I've never seen a kid who likes punishment. They sulk, they cry, they shout, they stomp, they don't like it. Sitting in the corner is a classic one. Sent to your room, on the bed with no toys, that was tough. No TV, no video games. I've heard of kids having their mouths washed out with soap, but I've never actually seen that one in action. If that happened to you, please come talk to me. I would like a firsthand account. I'll spare us all the details about belts and smacking and how no one apparently does that anymore. Kids hate this stuff. But you know what? Parents hate it too. Aside from those with certain psychological problems, parents don't enjoy disciplining their kids or punishing their children. What's the quote? "This'll hurt me more than it hurts you." Parents actually say that because they don't like having to correct their kids. Even if it's not punishment, the general work of raising a child in a disciplined manner is hard work. And kids don't like it either. So it seems like nobody likes it. No one wants to be corrected. No one enjoys a reprimand. Most of us don't like correction. Now, if you look at correction in the Bible, you may not enjoy it any more than you already do, but I hope you'll appreciate it more. And maybe have your view of what I'm calling correction changed. Correction is three things in Proverbs. Three things. Correction is painful. Correction is purifying. And it's sonship. It's painful. It's purifying. And as we'll see, it's sonship. Correction is painful. That's the first one. And that's one reason we don't like it. Have a look at the first passage, 27:5-6. Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Profuse are the kisses of an enemy. These proverbs, again, in your service sheet, when I say look, have a look, they'll be in your service sheet. These proverbs are reassuring us that rebuke from a friend is a good thing. Doesn't say it's easy, doesn't say it's painless. Says it hurts, but it's better than the alternative. Like a friend who lets you get away with bad behavior, or an enemy who flatters you. Even rebuke from a friend, though, feels like an attack, the wounds of a friend. Just last week, I heard one of you in this room complimented for being, quote, good at confrontation, a skilled confronter. That is a compliment. It's a skill, because most people come across, what, too harsh or too soft? But even when diplomatically delivered, correction has a bite. It still stings a little bit. So when correction hurts, one thing we do is avoid it. That's what 15:12, the next one shows us. A scoffer doesn't like to be reproved. He will not go to the wise. That translation, does not like is actually from the word for love. The scoffer doesn't love reproof. And that means he doesn't go to wise people who are going to give it to him. He doesn't invite tough conversations, doesn't welcome feedback, certainly doesn't ask for it. Correction. Fools, we're told, scoffers, avoid it. I think part of the lesson here is that we shouldn't just put up with correction. What this proverb is getting at, don't just put up with correction, but actually learn to love it. Actually learn to love it, to embrace it. That's what the proverb is trying to tell us. And again, this book of Proverbs is a book of wisdom. It's written in an ancient context that's in many ways very different from our own, but it contains wisdom for all time. Correction hurts. It hurt back then, and it hurts now. But it's not enough to simply put up with it. We should learn to embrace it. And if you're wondering why should I embrace it? We're going to see that later on. But let's take one more look at correction being painful first. So we struggle to receive correction. A scoffer doesn't like to be reproved, but we also struggle to give it. I said parents don't really like to punish their kids. If they could choose, they'd just have their kids behave instead of getting them to behave. We don't like to give that kind of correction, still that sort of discipline. Have a look at 23:13. Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you strike him with a rod, he will not die. The proverb saying, don't worry, parents, you can be tough on your kids. It's not going to kill them. Now, as I said, that doesn't go over in some societies very well today. Strike him with a rod, he won't die. Lax parenting, permissive parenting. This is the technical jargon for this sort of thing. I'm going to read from the research, okay? Lax parenting is a style of parenting that rarely disciplines a child, has low expectations for self-control, and lets the child do what they want. The parent is more of a friend to their child than a parent. It results in children who might act out or become aggressive. They may also be demanding and disregard authority because they're used to having no rules. Now, I know that's a sensitive topic because everyone, whether you've been a parent or have parents, has had to think about that concept and maybe even deal with it. Let's look at the next proverb. Let's see where Proverbs takes us, because there's a follow-up here that says, discipline your child and don't worry. Why? Because there's a bigger picture. There's a bigger picture. This is 23:14. If you strike him with the rod, you will save his soul from Sheol. The point here is that physical punishment won't kill the kid. A lack of physical punishment will. Just listening while your friend gossips won't do them any good, but speaking up will. That person who makes inappropriate comments in public, he's not going to stop until someone speaks up. It's awkward. It's difficult. But it's for their good and for everyone's good. Correction hurts. We don't like to take it, and we don't like to give it. And what we need is a new vision overall. Now, the proverb said that parental discipline can save a child from death. Proverbs 22:15 says this in a different way. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from him. I'm going to go right on to the next one. The ear that listens to life-giving reproof will dwell among the wise. Whoever ignores instruction despises himself, but he who listens to reproof gains intelligence. Correction rescues people from death. It drives out folly. It brings us into wise communities, and it actually gives us wisdom. Correction makes you a better person. Rebuke, chastisement, discipline, correction, whatever we want to call it, harsh realities, they are, but they are good realities. Because all these things are what? All these things are purifying. That's part of the vision. But it's time to level up. It's time to level up now. Parents and children, friends and friends, this is everyday life. And this is where we learn about correction and punishment and tough lessons. But it's not the best vision for it. Proverbs is going to say, look at those relationships. Look at your family. Look at your friends. Look at your colleagues. And now look at God. It's right there in the great passage from Proverbs 3, one of the most famous passages from the book. My son, again, this father speaking to his son, teaching his son on the way of wisdom. My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline or be weary of his reproof, for the Lord reproves him whom he loves as a father, the son in whom he delights. I mean, this passage alone should radically transform the way we feel about difficulties in life. If a good parent is trying to raise children in the home, most parents are just trying their best to raise children in the home, then God is working to raise his children in the thing we call life. Just recently, I was talking to a teacher who did teacher training in the UK. Now, at this stage, you often get put into really difficult schools for about a year, okay? You don't get your dream job straight away. Every teacher deals with a lot of chaos, takes crap from their students. But this guy's situation was next level, and I've heard others like it. Kids making crazy threats, insulting his family, fighting in the classroom. On top of that, the school had asked the guy to teach a completely new subject. So his subject was geography. And they said, well, in his words, you're tall, you have a deep voice, why don't you teach math? They'll listen to you. So he's not even a year in, and he's like, can't take it. I'm out of this. And he said, all I wanted to do was drive a bus in London. I wanted to be a London bus driver. Relatively chill. But as he's reflecting on his time, decades later, he says, I had something to learn. The Lord was teaching me. He was purifying me. And then he quotes James chapter 1. Count it all joy when you face trials of any kind. He realized it wasn't about the teaching or the bus driving. It was about himself. He said, God wasn't there to change my circumstances. He was there to change my character. What a phrase. He wasn't there to change my circumstances. He was there to change my character. That's actually what I had to learn. James says this, count it all joy when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness, and steadfastness to have its full effect, that you might be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. So what he had interpreted as God's cruelty or indifference was actually the work of love. He couldn't see it at the time. He really couldn't, but he sure can now. Now, he's teaching in his actual area of expertise. He leads this department. He's a great boss, and he loves the Lord through his work. He even drove buses for a while. Correction is purifying. And the Lord disciplines us out of love. He's not cruel. He's not cruel. He's concerned for our good. This whole thing about correction is that it's a form of teaching, and it's difficult, and it's good for us. Tough instruction. We really kind of lack an English word for this. What Proverbs talks about is correction, a rebuke, discipline, all these sorts of things. The closest thing we can get is like tough life lessons. That's what's going on. Because it's not God punishing us, and it's not God kind of just putting us through the grinder for the heck of it. It is this lesson with an end in mind that is hardship, really purposeful hardship. A Christian can look at that in life and interpret it as God's way of shaping our character. He loves us too much to be spoiled children. Correction is painful. Correction is purifying. And we haven't even gotten to the greatest vision of what this tough teaching actually is. Correction is sonship. Let's move on from our passage in Proverbs to Hebrews now, our New Testament passage. The first thing to note is that this passage from the New Testament quotes the passage from Proverbs 3. The New Testament likes to do this. They sometimes adjust the words. They have their own translation sometimes of that Hebrew text. But it's making the point that there's something important going on in Proverbs, and it has to do with Jesus Christ. You'll see it there in verses 5 and 6 of Hebrews 12. Second, it makes the link between human relationships and divine relationships a real one. Have you forgotten, Christians, the exhortation that addresses you as sons? This is verse 5. And then it goes on to Proverbs 3. My son, don't regard lightly the discipline of the Lord. The New Testament reads Proverbs as if it's talking right at Christians. It's not just a son in the ancient world and in ancient Israel, but a child of God himself. I mean, that's a major shift. It's a major shift in thinking about how to read that passage. Third thing is that it puts Jesus into the mix. I'm just going to list some of these things that are going on here, then we'll put them all together. It puts Jesus into the mix. He's in the first verse, back up in verse 3. Consider him, that's Jesus, who endured for sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. Jesus struggled, and you will struggle. Life was hard for him, and it's hard for you. Jesus endured, and so look to him and be encouraged. That's the connection. And that's why this is so important for the author of Hebrews. Why make all these connections and quote from Proverbs? Because these early Christians were going through the ringer. Life is tough for them, and they don't like it. Keep reading from the top there. Consider him who endured from sinners hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. In your struggle against sin, you've not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. Correction or discipline here is not equated to punishment, but like I said earlier, to trials in life, specifically struggles against sin. The Christian doesn't want to sin, ultimately. I know from the outside of Christianity, it can look like Christians are laced up in their piety and they're all very happy with it. But that's not the case. You know what Christians ask me? How can I be sure of my salvation? How can I be confident I'm actually a Christian given my struggle or temptation or failure? I'm so torn up about it. Surely I shouldn't be going through this. The answer to that is this. What you just described to me is actually evidence of being a Christian. Everyone in the world feels guilt. Everyone wants to do better. And everyone faces trials in life. But only that the Christian describes their inner life as a battle against sin. And that should actually assure you, I'm a Christian. What I have is real. There's spiritual work going on within me. What Hebrews wants us to see is that those struggles actually mean that God's concerned for us and is working to mature our faith. That's what those struggles mean. Christianity isn't a static thing. You don't just join the club and that's the kind of end of the story, or get this new name and that's all that happened. God doesn't make you his child, invite you into the home, and then let you do whatever you want to do. He doesn't spoil his children in that way. Now, he gives greater gifts than any human parent ever will. In that sense, we are spoiled people. He's not cruel. He's not unfair. But he's also more concerned with who you are and who you're becoming than any human parent could ever be. Just have a look at verse 10 here. For they, he's referring to earthly parents, mom and dad, disciplined us for a short time, as it seemed best to them. What a great way to put it. Parents, they're just trying their best. But he, God, disciplines us for our good, that we might share in his holiness. The Christian faith, you see this, the Christian faith offers a radically new vision for life's difficulties. They're the means by which God builds our character. It means we don't have to wallow in guilt, emphasis on wallow, we feel guilty. We don't have to think God's a cruel parent. That's why Hebrews points those early Christians and points us to the experiences of Jesus Christ, God's only true Son. Consider him who endures from sinners such hostility against himself. He's saying even Jesus underwent trials. Even he was tempted. He fought the battle with sin. He never lost, but he truly fought. Sinful people assaulted him, and he had to endure. But we're told he held to a vision from his Father. For the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross. That's earlier on in the chapter. For the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross. The Father showed him the end, the aim, the goal of all that pain. And so we too are given a vision. It's the last verse, verse 11. For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant. But later on, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. The pain doesn't leave. It still hurts. But we might find some joy in it. And God, he alone, gives us a new why. Why am I going through this? Why won't my circumstances change? Why, God, all those questions? To that, he says, I'm your Father. I have a plan for you, and I'm invested in who you're becoming. I'm changing you. And if you'd like some evidence, look at my one and only Son on the cross, who put love for you at the forefront of his life. That's his vision, by the way. That's the joy that's set before him. It's us. And endured death on a cross for your sake. Your trials are a sign that you're truly God's son, truly God's daughter, true child of God. And God will love you till the work is complete.